Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one-coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
Hello and welcome. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. And because you demanded it, we've got a great show for you lined up. It's been a while, but he's back with us, ladies and gentlemen. The master of the macabre, Mr. Dark Waters, is back on Beyond the Darkness. Dark, how are you today?
Dave, I'm doing fantastic. It's always good to spend some time with you and your audience. And you know I love you guys to death.
Oh, well, we love having you on, and it's, you know, it's one of those kind of weird balancing acts, man. If I could have you on, I'd have you on every week, but then I know people would, I want them to find your show, and I want them to go with you and share so that they can have both of us. And, so there's always this fine defining line. People are like, you guys just had Dark on. When are you going to have him back on? I'm like, man, we just had him on. Give me a little bit of time here. We want to build. So I know it's been a while. I'm glad we're able to get back together here and, spend some time with you. And I know you brought us an eclectic collection of different ghost stories tonight. Or different stories. You've got ghosts, shadow people, the old hag, a creepy clown, dog man. So you brought us a little taste of everything. How's it been for, I think it's been about 7 months since we've had a chance to visit on air. How's it going? You still getting pouring in amounts of stories or what?
Yeah, I'm getting more stories now than I've ever gotten. It's been an interesting transition for me. So, you know, YouTube went through its ad apocalypse and I was going through another one. I launched my website, iamdarkwaters.com. And then I launched my first actual full hard narration album called Crown Me King. I did that for Halloween night, and 17 stories that flow succinctly all the way through and give a person like a completely immersive horror experience. And that's some of the stuff where people are going to have an opportunity to hear from today. For the paranormal side, I'm proud of myself. I've been able to come to a management place where I can manage kind of the stuff that happens around me based on conversations with people. For a while there, it got out of control where I was talking to a few people and, man, crazy stuff was happening in the house. Like, I'm sitting on the sofa watching TV with my sons and the clock would literally fall off the wall, put it back up, the clock would fall off the wall again. Like, just crazy stuff. Laying in the bed and literally see a shadow of an arm coming out of my bed. So I found the peace with that through prayer and managing my prayer life. So, which in turn created balance throughout my whole life. So it's been a good experience and a learning experience over the past 7 months. But I mean, that's what life is. Life is about growing and becoming better. So I think that's what I'm doing at this point in time.
Fantastic. Now, I know you've been kind of our go-to dogman guy story, and you've been getting a lot of those kind of tales. Have you, has it started to open up for you? Are you seeing now that your audience is expanding, are you getting a lot of different stories of dogman from different states and countries now, or where is it still playing out the most for you?
I'm getting dogman from everywhere. I would say I get about 4 or 5 dogman calls per month. Out of the 4 or 5, I would say 3 are really, really true dogman encounters. The others are, I kind of saw this creature, but I'm not really sure if it was a dogman, right, if it was Bigfoot. But, I mean, like, the last encounter that I actually talked to somebody about is crazy because I was driving back from Texas to Louisiana at, like, 3 o'clock in the morning. I stopped at a gas station to use the restroom, and now I carry a little business card that says, I am Dark Waters, tell me your story. And it's just me and this guy in the gas station, Indian American, And I hand him my card, and I'm like, hey, man, you work in a gas station late at night. It must be creepy. You know, you ever seen anything crazy? And this guy's eyes start to roll back and forth. And I said, you can tell me, man, this is what I do. And he was like, well, I'll tell you after you pump your gas. So I go out, pump my gas, come back in. And I'm like, look, man, it's 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm driving. You know, you can tell me something or not. And he walks me out to the front of this gas station, and he starts to point. He says, you see how there's the interstate right there? And I was like, yeah. He was like, man, I was here about 2 weeks ago, and I went out for a smoke break at like 3:30 in the morning. There were truckers here, but there was no regular people here. And he said, I saw something jump across the roadway, like literally jump from across the little neutral ground or median from one side of the interstate to the other. He said, literally jump from the middle of the road to the other side, the middle of the road, and then off the road. And he said it started coming up the hill. So, you know, at any exit, when you're getting off the interstate, there's typically an incline where it kind of climbs up, or there's a decline, or it's flat. Well, in this case, there's an incline into a hill. He said, man, I saw it jump the road, and I couldn't really tell what it was because it was dark. But when it got up to the top of the service road, which led to the gas station, he realized it was like, he said, man, it looked like a werewolf. And I was like, what do you mean a werewolf? He said, looked like a werewolf off the movies. And it was on two legs. And he said it jumped across the roadway, like the little two-lane roadway, which is the service road. It one hop, jumped across that, and then it took off on an angle into the woods next to the gas station. And so I'm standing there talking to this guy. And he's like shaking. He was like, I don't really like going outside at night. You know, I don't like going out there at night after seeing that. He was just kept on saying, I don't like going out at night. You know, I don't like going out there. And he's like, I pretty much stay in here. And I was like, whoa. So, and that's a guy that I just talked into telling me his story. I didn't think it was going to be a dog man. I thought he was going to tell me like some crazy trucker tried to shoot him or something, you know?
Right.
So there are people seeing these creatures. Wisconsin.
Now, let me ask you real quickly. Are you getting a little bit more brave about the idea of when you're hearing cluster accounts of these beings? Are you starting to entertain the idea more of going out and investigating it yourself?
No. Why would I do that?
That's what I love about you. You're like, I'm a librarian, Dave. I'm a librarian. It's safer inside collecting the stories.
I collect the stories. That's it, you know. I don't believe in going out and trying to put myself. I did it one time. There's no need for me to do it again. And then there's a gentleman, I can tell this part. I'll tell you the whole story, Dave, but I don't want to tell his whole story because I think it's dangerous for him. But I talk to him on a daily basis. He's having ongoing dog man activity where he has the type of dog man that kind of looks like a fox, the smaller. He says it's cute. And I'm telling him, man, it's not cute. It's a baby. You know what I'm saying? It's not cute at all. When it gets older, it'll rip your head off. But he has an encounter where this thing peeks in his windows. It beats on his car doors. Just recently, one opened his door to his car and closed it back. He's out really, really isolated in the woods. And just opened his car door and closed his car door back. He goes out, turns on his flashlight, looks, and he sees it. And now the problem that he's running into is you got this smaller, younger one, but mama is not too far away. And she makes her presence known by growling. And he's like, man, when she growls, it's the most terrifying thing I've ever heard. I can't see her, and I don't know where she is, but when she growls, it sounds like she's literally standing next to you. And I was like, yeah, bro, you probably need to move.
Yeah.
But he's not going to move.
You and I are on the same wavelength there. Look at that, a baby one. Yeah, time to move. Sorry, everybody, pack up. Mm-hmm. We're leaving. Well, listen, we've got a lot of stories to cover tonight, and we're going to hold off your dogman encounter story that you sent us for the last one, so people will have to stay with us. But we're going to start off with a creepy ghost story, and this almost, when you were telling me about it, had the vibe of kind of the creepy little girls from The Shining feel to it, right? You've got Come Find Us is the name of the story. What can you tell us about this?
Come Find Us is a story that was shared to me, and it's an encounter that happened here in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina, because family members moved back, or actually sent someone back here to kind of get back in contact with their roots. They had moved to Atlanta before Hurricane Katrina, and the family was like, look, you need to go back to New Orleans to get down, you know, get back to your roots, say, hang out with your auntie. Well, this person comes back in town and hangs out with their auntie, and the auntie gives them this one rule. Says, look, whatever you do, you can play around the house all you want, just don't go in the attic. And they never understood why they couldn't go into the attic until they started experiencing this paranormal activity. And it ends up scaring the living daylights out of them. But at the same time, the young lady was going through this traumatic portion of her life where she was trying to find herself. But the paranormal encounter actually strengthened her, because it wasn't like they tried to kill her. It's just they scared her.
All right.
So it actually made her into a stronger person. It's a great story.
Let's give it a listen from Dark Waters Collection. This is Come Find Us. So my family is originally from New Orleans, Louisiana, but my parents decided to move to Atlanta in 2004. Lucky for us, because it was the year before Hurricane Katrina hit, and my father is a stubborn old bastard. Now I can imagine him and my mom being stranded on one of those rooftops for days, holding me, a two-year-old baby at the time. But by the grace of God, we were spared that fate, but many of our family members were not. And in 2010, my parents decided to send me to New Orleans for the summer. They told me I needed to get to know my family and my roots. So they packed me up and sent me down to my Aunt Kat's house, uptown New Orleans, Valence and Magnolia. Now, Aunt Kat had a big ass house. She had converted it into a duplex, rented out one side, but even with the conversion, the house was still huge. All her kids had grown up and moved out of the house, so when I arrived, it was just me and her. Now, you need to understand something. My Aunt Kat was the complete and total opposite of my mother. She was cool as the day was long. For example, the first night I was there, I found her in the living room smoking weed and watching The Cosby Show. And over the next couple of weeks, she and I would have these awesome conversations. Things that my mom would never talk to me about, like relationships, sex, drugs. And I never knew it, but my Aunt Kat had bought bitcoins when they were a dollar. This woman had 10,000 of them back in those days. And she was a part of the first bitcoin bubble. She sold 5,000 of them at $20 each. Aunt Kat was balling. And today she's a multimillionaire 2-3 times over. And I say all of this just to make this point, that my Aunt Kat was the person that I needed to talk to at that point in my life. She turned out to be an awesome teacher. I remember her telling me, don't be afraid of shit. Be fearless. Seize every opportunity. And if you fail at something, fuck it. You're not the first person to fail. So that summer was absolutely magical for me and did a lot for my confidence. I had free reign in the house. And Aunt Kat only had one rule, and that was to never open the attic door. Now, I didn't understand what this whole thing was about or why it was so important. And every time I asked about it, she just changed the subject. So for the most part, I just left it alone. That was until one night she walked up to Ferret Street, leaving me home alone. I was in bed when I started to hear these voices. And at first it was real low. It sounded like two girls saying, come find us. And at first I'm thinking to myself, what the hell is going on? I hop out of bed, look around, and nothing. Now I'm walking up to my bedroom door and I hear it again. Come find us. This time the sound is coming from upstairs. And as I'm walking up those stairs, I start to get this sinking feeling, and these waves of cold air rushed around my skin. The best way to describe the feeling is this. Take a t-shirt, wet it, put it in the freezer for about 20 minutes, then put it on your body. That's exactly how I felt. Now I get up to the top of the stairs, and I realize that this sound is coming from the attic. And I hear it again. But you gotta understand something about these old houses in New Orleans. It's nothing like your home that you're in right now. You see, there's no string and ladder that you pull down. And the ceilings were vaulted ceilings that were extremely high. I would have had to go down to the basement, get a ladder, then carry the ladder up the steps to that spot, set it up, climb up the ladder and into the attic. And that was just too much for me. I was freaked out. So I said it out loud. Look, whatever you are, you asking too much of me. I'm going back downstairs.
And I said it in a kind of joking, playful manner. But boy, when I turned around to go back down those stairs, I hear this screaming, an ear-piercing screaming coming from down at the base of the stairs. And when I look there, it's two little girls holding hands, both of them mouth wide open, screaming. They have on blue jeans, no shoes, and SpongeBob t-shirts. Now these two girls couldn't have been no older than 7 or 8 years old. And again, the screaming, oh my God, I never heard anything like that in my life. And then they disappeared. At this point, I'm standing at the top of those stairs, shaking. And the only thing I could think to do was go outside the house. I raced down the steps and out of the front door. And as I'm walking out of the front door headed towards the sidewalk, in my pajamas, my Aunt Kat is walking down the street. She says, "What are you doing outside this time of night? You're supposed to be in bed asleep." I looked at her. And I think once she saw the look in my eyes, she knew what was going on. Because she said, "Oh my God, you saw the twins. I'm so sorry, baby. I'm so sorry." She put her arm around me, walked me back into the house, upstairs and into her bedroom, and that's where I slept that night. The following morning over breakfast, she explained to me that she bought this house after Hurricane Katrina. And once she had done the renovations, she discovered that the family had moved because they were stranded in this very same house during Hurricane Katrina. The mother, father, grandmother, and two twin daughters. Those very same twin daughters died of dehydration, waiting for help in that attic. The family was heartbroken. The mother and father divorced, and the grandmother died. My Aunt Kat went on to tell me that the two twins have been haunting the house ever since she moved in. And as long as you don't open the attic door, they were pretty tame. They might scream or show themselves. But if you were to open the attic door, they would go apeshit crazy, moving things around, things flying off the walls, doors slamming. So she never went in the attic. And she told me, just to ignore them, and they'll go away. I was in New Orleans for a few more weeks after that incident. And I saw them two more times. Once I woke up and they were standing at the foot of my bed. And the second time I saw them in the attic window from outside the house. Now, it was hard to ignore them, but it was even harder to ignore the sensations that they caused. The cold spots, the chills, the tingling on your spine. But I could tell you one thing. When I got back to Atlanta, I was a different person. I was confident, strong. I knew my parents could tell. And that was all because I spent the summer in New Orleans, having fun with my auntie and experiencing the paranormal.
Another great one. Good story. Thanks a lot for sharing that with us, Dark. When you start hearing these stories, and I know we've talked about it in the past, does your fascination twist and turn? Do you go from really more interested in the ghosty aspects, and then next time it's more like the dogman encounters or the shadow people? Does your interest, like mine, always kind of rotate on what you're finding most interesting at this point in time?
Well, actually, over time, what's happened is it's not necessarily the topic that interests me, but it's the individual that tells me the story that I take an interest in now. Because, for example, just for this album, Crown Me King, there were so many stories that I had to choose from that I have in my repertoire. What I said was, let me go with the people who were the most interesting. Like, there are people who have these colorful lives. These amazing lives that kind of coincide with the encounters they have. Like, one particular guy I've been talking to worked construction, ended up working for the mafia, ended up being caught in the middle of some stuff, ended up, you know, having the feds come and investigate him, and then he had Bigfoot encounters because he was hidden in the woods trying to stay away from the federal government, right? And so the background stories kind of help me choose which topic, because in my opinion, the more colorful the person's life is, the more life experience they have, so they have a greater perspective on what they're experiencing. In his case, he was like, "You know, man, I kind of feel like it was karma because I did so many crazy things. I get away from all that, but, you know, the universe won't let me get away from my trouble. So now I have Bigfoot coming out of the woods tearing up my cabin." But it sounds like the police.
Sounds like the plot of a heist movie gone bad turning into a horror movie, doesn't it? Right? You know,
yeah,
the criminal gets away with it, thinks he gets away with it, and then he's got to face this beast in the woods as it goes on. Yeah, I get it. So it's more about the character of the people that tell the story that fascinate you. Have you ever, I mean, your area is so rich in history and in different religious belief systems. Have you ever considered going to like an old folks home with a nice recorder and mic and just talking to some of the elders there that live there about their lives and their stories to see if I've got to guess there's got to be some great ones that haven't been tainted by the internet or by overexposure to TV and people that have, you know, they're not out there researching this stuff. So they're not familiar that this is such a phenomena. Have you ever done that?
No, but I think I'm going to put that on my to-do list. Because that's something I think I should definitely give a shot. I never even considered doing that. I really didn't. But that would be a great thing to do. Number one, it'd give them someone to talk to and, you know, someone to hang with. I make some new friends that's got years and years of life experience. I think I'm definitely going to do that. I think I might do that next week, next Thursday, because I'll have time next Thursday, just to go in and sit down and talk to some people. But to answer your question, no. But, yes, it's a great idea. And with the rich, rich history of the city of New Orleans, I believe that those people will have a lot of stories. I know they'll have stories from previous hurricanes where the city was wiped out. That
right.
I know for a fact crazy paranormal things happened then as well, like Camille. So they'll have the content. I just never thought of doing it that way.
Yeah, it would be because we're getting to the stage where we're going to start losing some of the old history stories. And we'll be lucky if we find them here and there online collected somewhere. So it'd be great if somebody was going to be the purveyor of those stories. It should be Dark Waters. Now, let's go into this next bit, because one thing that's fascinated me through all of this has been shadow people encounters. And I have always felt, you know, I was very skeptical of the idea of shadow people because I know most people see them in very low light settings. I know how the eyes work. They're constantly changing and shifting to try to bring in as much light as they can and make sense of the room or the area around you. So you can very easily mistake things for movement, little floaters in your eye that just roll past right and it makes it look like something crossed your plane of vision. So I understand that. But then there are the true full-on shadow people encounters. And one thing I've been fascinated by, Dark, and I always ask when I do these live events, how many people have seen a shadow people or a shadow person? And in most cases, if there's 50, 60 people in the audience, you know, at least 12 to 15 of them will raise their hand. And I'll ask, how many of you have seen them in your bedroom? And out of that, usually at least half. And then I say, now, once you get past the initial shock and awe of seeing something in your room, how many of you just roll over and kind of go back to sleep? And almost all of them raise their hand. And I said, now, isn't that weird? Because if you woke up, Dark, and I was standing at the end of your bed watching you, you just wouldn't roll over and go back to sleep.
No, I'd freak out.
Right. But if it's a shadow person, you and I would think your initial reaction would be to freak out as well. But for some reason, people see it, they process it, and their first thought is, huh, I'm going to go back to sleep now. And they roll over and go back to sleep. And that has been something that shocked me. And I don't hear many attack or confrontational stories of shadow people in the bedroom. It always has seemed to me like they might be guardians, like maybe we're just catching in that glimpse our guardian angels, our watchers, the things that are there to protect us when we're most vulnerable. Because if we're really able to astral project, and as many believe we astral project all night long while we're sleeping, and that's what the dream realm is, then our body is the most vulnerable while we sleep. So maybe these sentinels of the dark are there to watch us and protect our bodies so that nothing else tries to get in while we're out. So that's always been kind of an interesting aspect to me. And I've also talked about the fact that how some people will wake up with sleep paralysis, the old hag syndrome, and they'll wake up and they can't move and they can sense another presence coming towards them and they begin to panic. And I've started to wonder, Dark, and I'm curious what your thoughts are on having heard all of these stories. And I know we've got a shadow person story and an old hag story coming up, but my thought is, what if we really are astral projecting? For that moment, we're connected through that silver thread to our body, but for all intents and purposes, we are bilocating. We are physically in one place and our soul is in another. What if our body wakes up a little sooner than the soul has had to return, and that presence, that sense we feel, coming towards us isn't something alien or monster. What if it is our own soul trying to return? And that panic mode is the soul, as it gets closer, you get excited, you're ready to get back in. It could just be that initial feeling, which gives us that sense of fear, why we're not able to really move, why we're, sensing that there are other things present, when all it is really just us, because it's there and then it's over. It doesn't last very long in most cases. So you'd believe then it's chemical or biological, but I think that, there might be some of that spiritual realm involved as well.
I think it may be a little bit of both. The theory that you just talked about is something I never contemplated, but I kind of like the concept of it. I can tell you from my personal experience, the things that I've experienced, what I've experienced, the terror that I felt and that I fought off, I don't think that's me terrorizing myself in that manner. And what I mean by terror is like someone pulls your spine. And like your spine becomes a guitar string, and they pull it and they prick it, and your whole body vibrates. That's terrifying. And it happens. It'll happen while I'm asleep. It'll happen sometimes while I'm awake. Like, I know that I've encountered something that has scared me to the core, like to the core of my soul. And so, kind of piggybacking on your theory, I believe maybe we do astral project in our sleep, but. And maybe these shadow men are guardians, or maybe they are guardians, and maybe there's things that we can do to remove our protection of our guardians, and when they're gone, then other entities have an opportunity to come in and terrorize us. Like you put it, what you did was you surmised kind of like, you completed a theory that I had, right? I went through a little time frame where I was kind of doing a few things I shouldn't have done, and I realized that while I was kind of doing things I shouldn't have done, I was starting to be terrorized that night. The minute I stopped and kind of repented for those things, it stopped. And I was like, this is interesting. I was like, this is very, very interesting. It immediately stopped. And I was like, this is very, very interesting. So maybe there, in some cases, we are like astral projecting out and we have protection while we're gone. But if we violate certain universal laws or rules or whatever you want to call it, sinning, whatever it is, well, then that little layer of protection is weakened. I call it the hedge of protection. Your hedge of protection is weakened, and then things can come in and mess with you, and it can bother you, and it can terrorize you.
That's so, swift justice right there. So it's your karmic justice when you're messing around. Maybe the guardians are a little bit more apt to let you get your ass kicked, so, spiritually. Yeah. That's an interesting point. Well, I'll tell you what, and like I said, not all shadow people encounters are this kind of innocuous, quiet, generalized story. Some of them do get a little out of hand. We've got one for you now. This is from Dark Waters. It pulled me out of the bed.
About 2 years ago, I started to have these strange and a little bit crazy things happening around my house. Simple stuff at first, like I would lock the door before I went to bed. When I woke up in the morning, the door would be unlocked. I would turn the TV off at night, wake up at 8 o'clock in the morning, and the TV was back on. Then one time I came home to discover that my garbage can inside the kitchen was turned over. Now, initially, I'm thinking to myself, this is some horror movie type stuff where someone's living in my attic or in my walls. So I go through the house, climb up in the attic with a flashlight, look around, nothing. There were no secret compartments, nothing like that. These little things went on for a little while until I had a conversation with my best friend, Joyce. Now, to tell you a little bit about Joyce, I've known her for about 15 years. She's what you call an empath and a psychic. I know this to be certain because over the years, Joyce has told me things about my life that have all come true. So I invite Joyce over to the house. And the minute she walks in the door, she starts giggling and laughing, saying that someone's tickling her. She goes on to tell me that I have three spirits in my house, one male, one female. She said that the male and female were playful and giddy and they meant no harm. But then Joyce walked down into the basement, and she stood at the foot of the steps and said, "You have something very, very dark in the back right corner of your basement. It's dormant, and it won't bother you unless you bother it. But that thing is no good. Whatever you do, avoid that corner in the basement. Don't touch anything and leave it alone." And so I did. For the next year, I ignored all the strange activity going on around the house and just chalked it off as some ghosts playing games. They never did one thing harmful or disparaging. They might move my keys every now and then, and sometimes I couldn't find my right shoe. But other than that, that was it. And then things took a turn for the worse. I leave to go to work, and I come home, and the pipe under the sink has burst. Water's flowing everywhere, flooding my kitchen floor, my hardwood floors in the living room. And then when I went down to the basement, oh my God, there were inches of water. 2 days later, I call service masters over to come and clean up the water in the basement. They come in with these heavy duty vacuum cleaners and these solutions. And man, I'm telling you, they got my house smelling great. Now, the whole time that this had went down, it kind of slipped my mind about that back corner of the basement. I never thought anything of it. About a day or so later, I'm laying in the bed watching TV trying to nod off to sleep. My favorite show, The Last Man Standing, was on. Tim Allen is cracking jokes, and my eyes start to get heavy. Finally, I doze off to sleep. Now, I can't tell you how long it was between when I closed my eyes and when all this activity started, but when it started, man, it was terrifying. I remember waking up out of my sleep because it felt like someone was tugging on the covers. And when I opened my eyes, my body, my entire body, was sliding downward towards the foot of the bed. And by the time this was over and I was fully awake, the lower half of my body was off the bed. My toes were touching the floor. I stand up and look around, and there's nothing there. I'm thinking to myself, what the hell is going on? Immediately, I turn on all the lights in the house, walk around, and take a look, but no one's there. That night, I was so shocked and afraid, I couldn't settle in to go back to sleep. So I stayed up and went to work. The next day, I come home from work about 4 o'clock, and because I didn't have any sleep that night, I'm absolutely exhausted. So the first thing I do is hop into bed. When I go to sleep this time, it's about 5 o'clock in the evening, still daylight outside, and I feel something yanking my right leg, and this feeling of terror comes over me. I'm pretty sure many of you have been afraid, but terror is something completely different. It's almost like someone or something is treating your spinal cord like a guitar string. They pull it or prick it and let it go, and your body shakes to the core. And now again, I can't go back to sleep. And when I had my third incident, I realized that something had to be done, because this had gotten way out of hand. I went to bed again, watching my favorite TV show, The Last Man Standing. This time, I wake up and I can feel a hand around my wrist, pulling my body out of the bed. I'm yanked with such velocity that my body rotates in the bed, my feet hit the headboard, and the next thing you know, my entire body is on the floor at the base of the bed. This time, my head slams onto the hardwood floor. And I told myself, I've had enough of this shit. I'm calling Joyce. So I called Joyce at 3:30 in the morning, frantic, telling her she needs to come to the house. And Joyce, one of my oldest friends, comes over to the house in her pajamas, walks in the door, and she immediately says, "Why did you go messing around in the basement?" And I go on to tell Joyce, the basement flooded. There was a cleaning crew down there. I didn't go down there and do anything. They just cleaned up the water. She said, "I told you, stay out of that corner of the basement." That's when Joyce went on to tell me that this entity that she was sensing was pure evil, and that I needed to leave and spend the night by her house. I grabbed my keys, purse, and a few other things. And as we're pulling off from the house, the lights inside start to flicker. I don't really have the words to explain to you the feeling of fear and terror that I had at that moment. But that's when Joyce reached over, grabbed me by the hand, and said, "It's going to be all right. Don't worry about it. I have some friends that'll come over and take care of this for you. They're demonologists. She said, but you can't go back into the house until they're done. End up spending 3 days at Joyce's house while we wait on these demonologists. They come in town, get the key to my house, and head on in. I would say they were gone about 4 or 5 hours. And when they came back, one of them had scratches on his face. It looked like someone had taken their fingernails and just ripped down his skin, these long red marks. The other one looked at me and said, listen, don't worry about it anymore. We've banished this thing from your house. The problem was, we had to banish the other spirits as well. Everything is gone. You won't have any more activity at your property, I promise you. Now, I heard what they said, and I know they told me that these things were supposed to be banished, but honestly, I was afraid to go home. And it took me about a month to get comfortable sleeping in my house again. And I'm not a pet person, but I even got me a dog just so I can have some company around the house. And my advice to you is, if somebody tells you there's some kind of negative energy in your house and to leave it alone, you leave it the hell alone.
Now, how does this affect you, Dark, when you hear these stories and you're reading them and then you record these stories, put all that work behind them? Does that ever play with your mind? Then do you spend the next night or two looking over your shoulders at every corner and every room to see if there's something there?
No, not anymore. It at one point in time, it did affect me that way. But it doesn't do it anymore. Again, because I've learned literally that I have to keep my hedge of protection very, very strong. And I do that through prayer. So when I was doing the Halloween album, there were like two stories that I kind of put in there that I knew were slightly demonic and or had demonic leanings, which, you know, I stay away from the demonic stuff altogether. And so before I even recorded those stories, I took about 3 days in prayer before I even recorded those. Then I recorded them. I didn't have any problems. And remember, I was telling you about the kind of time frame where I was kind of doing stuff I wasn't supposed to do. Well, when I was in that time frame, I would try to record and you would pick up voices in the recording, like in between me talking in the silent spaces, you'll pick up breathing like, ah, and you'll pick up words in the recording. I never let anybody hear, but it would freak me out. And I was
so,
like, man, this
so
is
you
crazy.
Were getting electronic voice phenomena while you were recording these episodes.
While I was recording episodes. Then, and Dave, you could tell me what this is. I'm sitting at my computer. I have no clue what the hell this is. I'm sitting at my computer in my little home office. There is no water faucet in that room. The kitchen is behind me, literally behind me, behind a wall. And I'm sitting there and I'm recording and 3 drops of water hit my forearm. I look up at the ceiling like, okay, well, maybe the ceiling's leaking. There's no water stains on the ceiling. No windows are open. It's not raining. 3 drops of water just land on my forearm. And I wipe it off and I'm like, this is like, it's a liquid substance. It's a little bit slimy, but it's a liquid substance. And I'm like, okay, maybe I spit on myself, you know. But I'm like, no, you don't spit in 3 drops, you know. It's just not going to be like 3, bloop, bloop, bloop. And so I kind of freak out and stop recording. At the same time, I get this like cold chill over my body. Stop recording. I give it about 2 days. Come back, start recording again. 1 drop drops on the back of my neck. And I'm like, uh-uh, this is not normal. You know, this is not normal.
No, this is not normal.
Like, this is not normal at all. So I literally stopped recording. And I, for like 7 days, and I, you know, I do about 6 days of prayer. Then I go back and start doing it again, and it hasn't happened since. So it's not necessarily always just the story that creeps me out. It's sometimes the things that happen around these stories. And that's why I'm very, very careful, because when I talk to that person about their story on the phone and they're telling me their story, I'm literally opening myself up to them mentally and emotionally so I can capture everything I need to recreate their story. So I'm giving whatever that thing is a portal into my mind, into my heart. So I'm just careful. I'm very, very careful.
Understandable. We've got more stories to share. We talked about the old hag syndrome. We've got a creepy clown story, a dogman story. We'll cover all that when we return.
Beyond the Darkness.
Hello, welcome back. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Today, we're hearing some tormented, twisted tales of terror from Dark Waters World. Dark has his own show. You can find him very easily. We're going to put up a link to his website, iamdarkwaters.com. Tell them how else they can find you, Dark. What are the best ways to locate you and your stories?
The best way to find my stories is at iamdarkwaters.com. The best way to actually talk to me is to pick up the phone and call me. 504-603-1630. That is how I get my stories, and that is how I've talked to people all over the world. Now, if you're one of those people who like
social media. Why don't you give that number again real quick,
504-603-1630.
All right. Now, when they call that, is that a voice service? Do they leave their story on there and their contact information? How does that work?
When they call, I answer the phone. It's a Burner app phone number that rings in my on my cell phone. The phone will ring, and I'll be like, hey, this is Dark Waters. And they'll be like, really? Like, yeah, that's me.
Great. So it's 504-603-1630. If you have your stories to share, share them with Dark Waters.
Absolutely.
All right, so those are some of the best ways to check you out. We'll have that link up on today's podcast, so you can find iamdarkwaters.com very easily. Let's get rolling. Now, we were talking a little bit about the sleep time issues, and the old hag syndrome is certainly one that a lot of people are familiar with. And you said you've had that sleep paralysis situation yourself, and there's really nothing more chilling from what I understand. I've been lucky enough to only have one real encounter with sleep paralysis, once that I'm aware of, that I can really fully remember. And that's what kind of spawned my idea that maybe it's my astral form returning to my physical form. And that was kind of where it came from. But it was nonetheless, it was terrifying, because you can't move. You can't take a deep breath. There's just this true, sincere feeling that you are being held against your will and not being allowed to live. And I often wonder if we are breathing, obviously, if the reason we feel we can't breathe is because our soul is outside of our body and it is trying to physically breathe, which it cannot do. So I wonder if that's kind of what makes part of that weird paralysis, you know, feel so real and so different. But yet you're aware you're breathing because you're alive, right? If you had stopped breathing, you wouldn't be there unconscious. You'd be gone.
Right.
So I don't know. It's fascinating stuff. Why don't we dip right into the story? We've got long distance relationship. This is another one of Dark Waters' favorite stories right here on Beyond the Darkness.
Man, I can't believe that after all these years, I'm finally telling this story. You see, it was in the 1980s. I was a young man, 23 years old, and I was madly in love with this woman named Heather. She and I had been high school sweethearts, but Heather had gone off to college in another state, and I stayed home with my parents. Now, being in a long-distance relationship in the 80s, it's something that I would never really wish upon my worst enemy, especially in the 1980s. See, back then, there were no cell phones where you can constantly have communication with your partner. All you had was a regular house phone. And then to make that phone call cost money. It was long distance. And I'm not talking about 10 cents a minute. I'm talking about $1.89 per minute for that phone call. So the long distance relationship between Heather and I ended up being very, very rough. She's off to college, meeting new guys, new girls, exploring her life. I'm still back at home in our old town, trying to figure out what I'm going to do with myself. We would talk sporadically here and there, 1 minute conversations, 10 minute conversations, but nothing of any significance. I could literally feel the love of my life slipping through my fingers, and I didn't know what to do. I'll never forget it. It was a Friday night. I got off work early, called Heather to try and settle in and have a good 20-minute conversation. She answers the phone, and I hear all these voices in the background. male voices, female voices. Now, keep in mind, she's staying in an all-girl dormitory, so when I started to hear the men's voices, it kind of freaked me out a bit. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, this is going to be the end of this relationship. It's probably better if I break it off before she breaks it off. So I tell her, hey, Heather, give me a call when you're alone and we can have a conversation. She calls me back, I would say, about 2.5 hours later, right about 8:30, 9 o'clock. It's quiet in the room. And I start to tell her, listen, Heather, I love you more than life itself. But I'm not really feeling comfortable with you being off away at college and me being here. I feel like I'm playing the waiting game while you move on with your life and I'm here all alone. I think we should put an end to this. I think that you need to be free to pursue your dreams and I need to be free to pursue what's best for me. That's when I realized how much of a fucking idiot I was. Heather starts crying on the phone, explaining to me that she's been focused on her studying, and no matter how many men have tried to speak with her and talk to her, she wouldn't do anything. She even went to explain that her roommate had a party in the room, and that the reason why I heard her answer the phone is because she was on her way out of the door to get some peace and quiet at the library while her friends were partying it up with guys in the room. Oh my God, I felt like a bumbling idiot. I really didn't want to break up with her. I loved her. But my insecurities got the best of me. So I told her that night, babe, I'll be there in the morning. You and I need to sit down and talk. I need you to understand something. The drive from where I lived to where Heather was 6.5 hours. It was already going on 10 o'clock. So I was going to drive through the entire night to go see her. And I know that's foolish and stupid, but that's what you do when you're young and in love. You do stupid shit. So I get up, pack a bag, grab my keys, and head out of the door. I'm 1 hour into the drive, and I'm feeling good. 2 hours into the drive, I'm doing all right. 3 hours into the drive, I gotta stop and get me some coffee because my eyes are starting to get a little bit heavy. About a 4 or 5 into the drive, I'm starting to realize that I made a mistake and I might need to take a nap. So I pull over at this rest stop on the side of the road. Now I need you to understand something. If you've never driven a car into the wee hours of the morning, then it's hard to explain the sensations and feelings that happen when you're on the road and you're about to fall asleep. So if you're driving, there may come a time where you start to hallucinate, which is what I was doing. I was driving along the road and I could have swore I saw a Black Panther on the road. That's why I pulled over and decided it was best for me to stop at the rest stop. And I say this because there's a small possibility that what I'm about to share with you could have been a hallucination, but I seriously doubt it. I pull over at the rest stop, right off the road. Look around, it's not many cars there, maybe one or two, and they're sporadically spread around. And I figure those were people who were sleeping in their cars. Now the area is pretty well lit. And there's this little building. There I can clearly see a Coke machine and a snack machine and two signs that say restaurants. Now, in my mind, I'm thinking, hey, I just need to take a break off the road. I got to push it for about 2.5 more hours. Let me get out of the car, go take a leak, get a snack, get some sugar in my system, get some more caffeine in my system. I'm going to push on through this ride. I get out of the car and I start walking up towards the building. As I'm getting closer, I start to get this creepy feeling. But there's no reason for me to be creeped out. When I say that it's well lit, I mean it's well lit. It's pretty much bright as daytime out there. But I'm still getting this creepy serial killer watching me type feeling or emotion running over my body. I walk up to the Coke machine and drop my money in. Hit the button and a Coca-Cola falls out. Then I walk over to the snack machine, put my money in, hit the button, and my snacks fall out. Now I'm standing there looking at these restrooms. On the left is a women's restroom. On the right is a men's restroom. Brown brick wall, blue doors. Writing is in white. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, if there's any point in time where you're going to feel like some shit's going to happen to you in the middle of the night, it's in one of these rest stop bathrooms. But I really had to take a piss. And as a grown man, there was no reason for me to be afraid. So I take my Coca-Cola and my honey bun and put them up on top of the snack machine, thinking to myself, look, I don't want to walk into this bathroom with something in my hands if I need to defend myself.
So I put both my Coca-Cola and my honey bun on top of the snack machine and I enter into the men's restroom. Once I get into the restroom, just as I thought, no one was there. I go to take a leak and I come back out. But when I walk back out and reach for my Coca-Cola and my honey bun, it's not there. Gone. Now, this is not me hallucinating. This is not me imagining that I put my money in the snack machine and I went to go buy this. I literally put my money in the snack machine. So now I'm looking around to see who stole my shit. And there's no one there. Again, this kind of creepy, weird, eerie feeling comes over my body. And I think to myself, hey, you know what? You achieved your goal. You took a piss. Let's just get out of here. So I start digging in my pocket for my keys and walking away. And that's where I hear what sounds like someone's foot sliding across the concrete. I turn and I look to my right. She's got on blue jeans and a black hoodie. How can I tell it's a woman? Because she was curvy and her figure was nice. But I'm getting this odd feeling about this woman. Like everything inside of me is telling me I should run to my car and drive off. I say, ma'am, miss, excuse me, did you take my honey bun and my Coca-Cola? Nothing. Ma'am, excuse me, did you take my honey bun and my Coca-Cola? That's when this lady turns around. And I hadn't noticed everything about this woman because she was standing in this area where kind of the light did this concave motion and left this small space of darkness to where I could see her silhouette and make out that she had on jeans and a shirt, but I couldn't see exactly what her head looked like. But she started to turn her face and enter into the light, and oh my God, there was this older woman. Not like an old hag where her skin was hanging off her face, but she had to be 75, 80 years old. But her body figure didn't fit her face. It was almost like you took a younger woman's body and stuck this 70-year-old head on top of it with this wild black hair with gray roots. And this woman looks at me, and inside of her hand is my Coca-Cola and my honey bun. But her eyes are black. I mean jet black. And she smiled. And at first, I thought my eyes were playing a trick on me. She winks. And I realize something about the situation doesn't make sense. There's no way that this is possible. So I turn and start running to my car, hop in, crank up, and pull off.
For the next 3 hours, I was haunted by the vision of what I saw. This woman dressed in all black with black eyes, holding that damn honey bun and Coca-Cola. A few hours later, I arrived at the college campus. Sun was getting ready to come up. I parked, slept in the car, and then had breakfast with Heather. We talked about our relationship and the expectations and setting boundaries and finding ways to communicate better to make sure that no one was insecure. And although getting there was completely and totally traumatic to me, 3 years later, Heather and I got married, went on to have kids, and we've been together ever since.
If you love the paranormal and you love paranormal TV programs, remember your old buddy Dave was part of Paranormal Challenge, a miniseries that was on the Travel Channel. Zach Baggins and myself, along with two different paranormal teams, would go into some of the most haunted locations in the United States. We would pit them against each other to see how they were able to handle the equipment, the history of the locations, and the hauntings. What would they bring to us as real evidence? We had a great time doing that mini-series. All 14 episodes are available in one DVD set. I've got them available. I'll sign them for you if you're interested. They're $30 a set delivered, and that's to any place right here in the continental United States. If you're interested and you'd like to order those, then all you need to do is email me, dave@darknessradio.com, dave@darknessradio.com, and I'll send you out an invoice, and as soon as that invoice is paid, those will be signed and sent out to you post-haste. So if you'd like to get Paranormal Challenge, the complete series, all in one set, it's a 3-DVD set, then just write to me, dave@darknessradio.com, and I'll make sure it gets out to you. Our guest today is the one and only Dark Waters. We've got a couple more stories to share as we're going through this. Now, I want to talk to you about our next story, this creepy clown phenomena. Now, this is something that seems to be relatively new, and it's been over the last few years. And I found it very interesting, Dark, that this phenomena really started to kick off again right after they announced that Stephen King's movie It was going to be produced for the big screen.
and Pennywise the Clown would be coming back. Suddenly, there are all of these viral videos of creepy clowns hanging out in the woods or in creepy places. And I started to think, I think this is just probably one of the best orchestrated creepy moments and marketing campaigns that's come out, because it seems that that clown phenomena has died down. And what's nice is when you start with something like that, you've got a lot of copycats and horror movie fans that are going to also go out and do it because they think it's funny to creep people out dressed as a clown. So I wonder, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are. You know, when it was released, that movie was going to be coming out. All of a sudden, we had all of these creepy clown encounters. Now that the movie's come and gone, really, that has waned quite a bit. Do you think there's a tie-in there, or do you think it was just coincidental timing?
I think there's a little bit of a connection, and I think something can be attributed to that movie and excellent marketing. But also, then you have to go back into the history of what where the kind of creepy clown and the association with the assault on children comes from. And that comes from, you know, centuries ago where when they would actually kidnap and torture little children, they would pretty much put clown makeup on their face and torture and kill little children. I don't want to go very, very deep into it because I don't know if the audience even wants to go there. But, I mean, there's a history of that with child abduction and that actual painting yourself to look like a clown, which when you take the movie It and you move into the future of the movie, you know, it, especially this version versus the one I saw when I was a kid. I mean, I saw them pretty much ripping the kids apart on TV in the movie. I was like, yo, I don't really want to watch somebody do that to a kid. So, it's one of those things to where there's a true history, whereas art mimicking life, it's kind of you watered down, but there is a history of that, a long history of that going back centuries. So,
I often wonder, Tim and I joke about it, you know, why are people so fearful of clowns? Is it because they've seen imagery of scary clowns? They've seen the cover of It. They've seen things like that that have spawned this? Or did the fear always exist? And then, you know, they played off of that fear. Because I personally, I don't understand the fear of clowns. And I'm not putting down people that have that as a real thing in their life. I just have a hard time processing that thought process that this is a real thing. It seems strange, and it's one of those irrational fears to me. But then on the other hand, the people that are terrified of clowns probably love snakes, which to me makes absolutely no sense. You know, so we all have our inbred, innate fears of different things. And do you think sometimes, you know, these tulpas, these thought forms, do you think that sometimes this malevolent force that may live out there, whether it's really a dark demonic entity or just a malevolent, you know, prankster spirit, does it take on these forms knowing that it will affect people and breed fear, which is what the whole movie of It is about, right? This being, which really isn't a clown, but it feeds off of the fears of each one of the individuals, and it kind of takes the form and shape of the biggest fear, and then it kind of feeds off that energy that comes from it. Where do you think that, you know, in these kind of experiences where people are seeing crazy things, you know, Slender Man, horrific clowns, just kind of creatures that are outside even the normal of cryptids with, you know, Bigfoot and Chupacabra and Dogman and that, where do you think this is coming from?
Two things. I think, number one, I personally believe that as human beings, there are certain fears that are kind of genetically ingrained into us. I believe that, you know, genetically we pass down, just like we pass down traits of having blue eyes, brown eyes, red hair, blue hair, black hair. I believe that also our DNA can be affected by what our ancestors encountered, right? And there's these genetic traits of ingrained fear responses that we have based on what, as humanity, we've encountered, right? So I think part of it is that. I think another part of it also is that at the end of the day, when you look at everything that's going on in totality, the whole spectrum of cryptids, Dogman, creepy clowns, I think a lot of what we're seeing right now is the power of technology allowing people to finally communicate their experiences. So when I was, you know, 21 years old, people couldn't communicate those experiences to each other. And so therefore you didn't find a network of people who were supportive and saying, hey, I saw a werewolf, or I saw a shadow man, or I saw a Topa. Like, there was no way of connecting with other people who experienced what you've experienced in life. So what happens is you suppress those encounters. Going back to the original point of going to the kind of old folks home and talking to people, those people had no choice but to suppress their kind of, you know, paranormal encounters, right? Could you imagine in the 1950s saying, hey, man, you know, I think I saw a big female Bigfoot running down the street with big breasts and she was carrying a deer. They'd be like, you're crazy, right? So I'm serious. So nowadays, you know, because of technology and how it's allowed us to interconnect and connect with each other, there's these networks of people who actually share their encounters. Now, some of those encounters are fake and frauds, and some of the people are actually off their rockers a bit. But what I've discovered from my work is that the majority of the people that I've talked to have encountered something. They may exaggerate it a little bit. They may, you know, spice it up with a few sprinkles of gold dust. But when you get to the bottom of it, they did experience something. So I think those are the two things that are really, really playing into it from a fear aspect. I know for a fact that at this point in time, fear, as a father, fears, you know, are genetic. I look at my sons who have some of the similar fears that I had as a young man. And I'm like, yo, you got that fear from me, man. We got to break that. I broke that a long time ago. And then I know for a fact that the world being interconnected the way it is allowing people to share experiences and encounters. And it's kind of murking the water a little bit and making it kind of blurry. But at the same time, it's a wonderful, amazing thing because it's a great awakening of what's going on in the world. I mean, we're in the process of living through the greatest awakening probably in humankind's history. So I just think we should embrace it and learn as much as we can.
I agree with you. Well, let's go now to your original creepy clown story. Here's another from Dark Waters.
I grew up in a small town, Sylvan Grove, Kansas. Population, no more than 350 people in the 1990s. And when I say this town was small, I mean small. Everybody was in everybody's business. Now, Halloween was a special time around Sylvan Grove. You see, we always had the pre-Halloween celebration. And the biggest part of that celebration was this clown show. The clown? Mr. Reeves. Now, Mr. Reeves is what I would call the original creepy clown. And I still remember to this day the rumors that swirled around about him. People said he was a pedophile. Some people said he was a murderer. But it was awfully odd and strange that Mr. Reeves only could get a gig working as a clown during Halloween. And I still remember how freaky and weird his performance was. His voice, the balloons, and the weird ending with him stabbing watermelon.
Ladies and gentlemen, we present before you tonight an entertainment extravaganza. Aha! Balloons! What fun! Suffer your fate! And suffer your fate! And suffer your fate!
Now, like I was saying earlier, the day after the Halloween performance is actually Halloween. And I'll never forget it. Me and my best friend Eddie were so excited about headed out and going to get us some candy. Our plan was to hit two houses. They were absolutely mandatory. The first was Mrs. Hughes. She always gave out these candy cigarettes and fun dip. And the next one was Mama D. Mama D would give you ring pops. Bags full of ring pops. Everything else in between was completely inconsequential. The problem was, Mama D was on one side of the town and Miss Hughes was on the other. So we had to trek all the way across town. We decided to start with Miss Hughes' house first. We headed out on our bicycles and rode over there. One thing you gotta understand about my town is, the houses sit off the street. You had to ride up these long dirt driveways in order to get to the actual house. I'm talking about 75 yards off the street. When you got there, you got your candy and headed back out. So we hit Ms. Hughes' house, the mother load. And I need you to realize, since it wasn't a whole bunch of kids in this town, the candy was separated between about 25 of us. So when we went home,
We went home stacked. We hit Miss Hughes' house, get our candy. And Eddie and I decide to skip the houses in between and go straight to Mama D's. And that's when stuff starts to go wrong. I'd say we're about 3/4 of the way to Mama D's house. And we get to this section where we have to ride along this dirt road. From there, you turn left onto this paved road, and then it's about a 5-minute ride to her front door. So we're riding along this dirt road, and Eddie starts to freak out. Hey, man, do you see that guy up there? There's somebody standing in the roadway. Look, somebody's standing in the roadway. And I've always had to wear glasses. And I'm not talking about regular glasses. I'm talking about bifocal glasses. And in that dim light, I really couldn't see what he was talking about. But Eddie is freaking out. Somebody's standing in the road. Somebody's standing in the road. He literally stops his bike. I keep riding forward. Eddie, come on, man. Stop playing. Let's go. As I get closer and closer, my vision starts to be able to kick in and focus a little bit. And there's someone standing in the middle of the roadway, dressed as a clown. But this clown has horns on top of his head. And that's when it hit me. The only person that ever dressed up like a clown that included horns was Mr. Reeves. I come to a screeching halt on my bike, put both feet on the ground, and stand up, lifting my butt off the seat. And now I'm staring at him. Come here, kid. Come here. Come over here, kid. Come here. You know how your instincts tell you you just shouldn't do something? Well, my instincts were screaming at me. Oh, no, we're not going down there by him. Never. And in that moment, Eddie pedals his bike up right next to me. Come on, man, we need to go. We're going the other way. We need to turn around. Now, this clown, which I'm pretty sure was Mr. Reeves, was about 45 yards away from me at this point in time. And then he takes off running towards me. And I know as a kid, you kind of panic and freak out and your mind sees things. But I swear to you, it looked like he had a big silver butcher knife in his hand. Now, could it been a knife? Could it been a bag of candy? I was so freaking afraid, I can't tell you. But in my childhood mind, that was a butcher knife. Man, when I tell you, we turn around and start pedaling on those bikes as fast as we can. And when I look over my shoulder, he's gaining ground on me. That's when I realized it really was a knife. Man, we pedal as fast as we can. Make a quick left turn back onto the paved roadway. And then speed as fast as we can all the way home. When we got to my house, Eddie and I told my dad exactly what we saw. But he didn't believe me. He figured that we were just panicking because we were out after dark. But I promise you, that was Mr. Reeves. He was the original creepy clown as far as I'm concerned.
Hey, everybody. If you love the paranormal, you love strange stories, and you love the books that you hear about on our show, remember, the easiest way to get them is by visiting darknessradio.com and click on the Killer Deals link. That'll give you access to our Amazon page where we hand select the books and all of the cool products on that page. And with Christmas coming, there are a lot of fantastic gifts and gift items right there for yourself or your loved ones, the ones that are hard to buy for. This is the way you want to go. So check it out for yourself. Go to darknessradio.com. Click on the Killer Deals link, and remember, every time you make a purchase through that link, whether it's the items we have stored there or if you start searching out your own items, a small percentage of those sales go a long way to help our show. It helps pay down our administrative costs and more. So please go check it out at darknessradio.com. Click on the Killer Deals link. Now, we saved one of your stories for last, the dogman encounters, which always seem to be very popular when you visit with us. And I'm glad that you were able to come up with a new one. And before we play the final story that you brought, I know you tickled us a little bit in the beginning of the show in one of the segments with some of the dogman encounters. But as you're hearing more and more about this, I've got to know, Dark, I mean, for this many people to be encountering this kind of figure, this kind of being, and it only seems to be the last 10 years where it's become part of the Norman or a normal kind of culture of the cryptids. Bigfoot has always been the reigning champ supreme. The idea of werewolves, of course, has been around for centuries, but
this dogman thing seems to be a basically kind of a newer phenomena. Or as you're finding out and hearing more and more stories, do you find that there isn't necessarily that it's new, it's old, but it comes in cycles, almost like a werewolf? They're there for periods of time, and then their species vanish, and then they come back again. How do you feel it's working?
I feel like at the end of the day, what's going on is two things. I've had stories that people have shared with me from the 1940s, 50s, 60s of Rougarou or Dogman. So it's not something that's new. I think what happened again is that Bigfoot was at the top of the ladder when it came to cryptids, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Bigfoot, from a marketing standpoint, not from, you know, encounters, but from a pure marketing standpoint, Bigfoot was at the top of the totem pole. So you had people who were Bigfoot researchers, Bigfoot storytellers, Bigfoot shows, blah, bada bing, bada boom. Well, along comes the kind of dogman stories. And then our natural fascination, why people are fascinated with these creatures the way they are, I don't understand. But the natural fascination with them, the concept of whether it's a person who transforms into a wolf, or whether it's a canine that's been genetically spliced, or the fascination with it kind of increases popularity. And then from a monetization standpoint on YouTube, books, things of that nature, people started to notice that, hey, there's a huge audience that consumes this almost in a cult-like format and fashion. And so now what you see is a proliferation of the content, a huge proliferation of content. Some of it true, majority of it not true, majority of it not vetted, only because it's easily monetized. And that's why you're seeing this huge proliferation of what people consider to be stories and all this information coming out. Now, when you get down to the nitty-gritty of the people who have the encounters, the people who actually have these encounters, David, I talk to them, they don't want to share their encounters. That's how I know majority of the stuff out there is kind of exaggerated stuff, because they really, really don't want to share the encounter. They don't want to relive these encounters, because it takes me, on average, if someone wanted to tell me a ghost story, they'll tell me the ghost story within the first conversation. When I talk to someone who's had a true dogman encounter, that first conversation is, yeah, man, I saw something in the woods, but I don't know if I want to tell you. And it takes me like a week and a half to drag them through that whole encounter, because every time I kind of bring their mind back to that situation, they pull themselves back like, no, you know, I don't want to talk about it, or they'll change the subject. So I know for a fact it's not something that people are like, hey, let me just knock on your door, let me tell you about my dogman encounter today. That's not how it works. But I just think it's the monetization behind the topic, and it's extremely popular and it's easily monetized, that you're seeing this huge proliferation. You're seeing books now that talks about people doing movies. There's about 30, 40 YouTube channels with stories that they completely and totally make up. So I think that has a big part to do with it. Now, when we start talking about the real deal encounters, I mean the true encounters, the people that I've talked to are afraid. Number one, because a certain percentage of them encountered the beast and it either let them go or it broke something around their house. And then after that encounter, they've encountered individuals, human beings, who warned them about sharing information about those encounters. And that's one of my litmus tests is, hey, you had a dogman encounter? Yeah. Did anybody come pay you a visit? Well, what are you talking about? Did anybody notice anything weird about your phone calls? Anything crazy going on? Because the guys that I know that have had the real deal encounters, they've had crazy stuff happen after the encounter to ensure that they don't really go too far with telling their story, or that they alter their story. So I think that answers the question and spills the beans a little bit more than probably what I should, but that's the best answer for it.
Do you believe that these are humans that are transmorphing into animal form, or do you believe that these are earth-dwelling creatures that have always existed? And you know, I'm just curious where your kind of thought process is on that aspect of the story then.
Well, I stand in two places on. I think that because there are variant types, I believe that there have been some creatures that are earth-dwelling creatures that have been here for a very, very long time. Whether you go back to the Bible and you start talking about, the pestilence that was on earth and why Noah flooded the planet. But then I know for a fact, without a doubt, I'm not going to tell you how, I'm not even going to go into that, that there have been genetically modified and spliced animals that roam this planet. And then that there's a particular type of dog man that is that type, that is what they consider a weapon. I mean, completely and 100% weaponized entity that you can drop somewhere and it will kill anything anywhere in the area, period. If you got some jihadis on the top of a mountain and bombs won't get them, hey, let's drop this thing over there and let it go kill them. Hands down, without a doubt, there's a version that's that, period.
Isn't that, I thought that was the premise of the movie Dog Soldiers, right? Wasn't it? They had werewolf soldiers that they were able to drop into these highly sensitive areas. You think that there's some realism to that?
Well, there were those in that movie. There were human beings that transformed into wolves. Right. I'm talking about a Crimea that was specifically created for the intent of doing what it does. So it's never been a human, never will be a human. It's genetically spliced, and you can go, for the listening audience, you can actually go back and look and find about governments like the Chinese government growing individual spliced entities inside of, you know, cow's wombs and inside of pig's wombs. You can find about the genetic splicing if you go out there and look for the information. And then it's not that far-fetched to draw the conclusion that, yeah, somebody has created a creature that's a weapon, period. It's not far-fetched to draw the conclusion at all once you go back and read the white papers and the story and stuff that's out there. And the reason why I dug that deep is because I started doing interviews and people wanted an answer for what it was. And I was like, you know, there's got to be a real answer. So I started digging deep and doing my research on it, looking through it. Then I started contacting people who had warned me about talking about Dogman. Like literally say, hey, you know, be careful what you say about blah, 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 blah. And I said, listen, you know, clearly this is some kind of genetically spliced animal. You can't say yes or no. Just call for me if I'm on the right track. All right. Thank you. Click. Bye. And that's that. So it's one of those things to where, yes, I believe that there's one that's been a type that's been roaming the earth for a very long time. I think that thing was probably captured, DNA taken, and then a mega monster created that that can run around and really, really run amok. And there have been people who've had encounters with this one that runs amok, and it never ends bad. Never ends good. Never, never, never ends good. People have the encounter with the one that looks like a fox. It'll look through their window and peek at them, and they'll have an encounter with the one that kind of looks like a Doberman pincher, and it'll intimidate them. But then you have the encounter with this other one. It's just never. Every last encounter that I've had the accurate description of this creature, it never ended good. I mean, never, never, ever.
Well, let's go to our final story this evening from Dark Waters. This is Stand By Me.
When the night has come and the land is dark, and the moon is the only light we'll see, no, I won't be afraid. Oh, I won't be afraid. Just as long as you stand by me. So darling, darling, stand by me. Oh, stand.
My wife April and I have been married for 13 years. And actually, we met in elementary school. It's a kind of a funny story. You see, April came from a military family, and her dad was actually the PE coach at school. Man, I remember back in those days, we used to play dodgeball, right? And boy, once her dad found out that we were talking, I swear to you, during PE, he would throw these dodgeballs at my head, and they were coming in like rockets. I mean, it was crazy. But over time, Bill and I have become close friends. So about a year ago, April and I decide to go camping. Arkansas National Park. We drive up and get to the regular camping grounds. But April, being the adventurous woman that she is, she wanted to hike out further to one of the more isolated campgrounds. We get there, set up, and the first night, we can hear the coyotes yipping in the distance. Then, all of a sudden, there's this sound. I'm not sure how to describe it. It was kind of like a roar, but nothing like I've ever heard. And next, all you could hear was a coyote screaming bloody murder like they were being killed. The next morning, we wake up, cook breakfast, and go for a walk along one of the trails. I say we walked about 2 miles when we come across this dead coyote laid across the trail. This thing's body was split up from the belly to the chin. Now, it wasn't like anything had taken a bite out of this coyote. And I thought it was kind of weird because it was just laid in the middle of the trail. And you could tell something or someone had placed it there because you could kind of see the blood splatter and the marks where it hit the ground and rolled on its side. April, my wife, looked completely and totally freaked out and kept saying how strange it was. Now, as for me, yes, I observed this and it was strange. But to be honest with you, I was just trying to get this walk over with. We walked for about another mile along that same trail and then turned back. And when we passed back by that very spot, the coyote's gone. Again, I personally didn't take it all that serious, but April was really freaking out. So much so that she wanted us to move from that isolated campground that she had just picked the day before to one of the ones that was closer to the area where we parked the vehicle. Now, in full disclosure, I hate the woods. And the only reason why I even went out here for this trip in the first place is because I promised my wife I would. So I was toughing it out, trying to make the best of it. But at the end of the day, I was actually happy to be moving closer to the car, because in my mind, the closer I got to the car, the closer I was to getting the hell out of these woods. So we pack up, move to another campground. And this one is wide open. The trees are cut back around the area about 60 to 70 yards. There's a couple on the far end of the campground, and we're positioned closer to the little walkway that leads to the cars. Things are going absolutely great. We're in our tent, snuggled up talking, and then we hear the roar again, this time accompanied by a scream. The next thing you know, we're hearing footsteps, human footsteps, heavy breathing, and a man saying, "Oh my God." April unzips the tent and pokes her head out. And the next thing I know, she's gone. No words, no warning, no baby run, I'm coming right back, nothing. You know how those cartoons when someone takes off moving so fast that all you see is this gust of wind? Well, I swear to you, all I saw was the tent flapping. From that moment, I would say it took me about a solid 10 to 15 seconds to throw on my pants, slide on my tennis shoes, and when I poked my head out of that tent, I just couldn't believe what my eyes were showing me. Right next to the fire, where the other couple was camped, was a fucking monster. And I don't mean like a cartoon monster. This thing looked like the werewolf from Underworld. The one that was locked up in the coffin with all the chains. And it was massive. It was standing on two legs and tearing that couple's tent into shreds. I knelt there for at least a minute or so, frozen in place from the shock of what my eyes were showing me. And I watched this thing start to piss all over their stuff. And then this creature starts sniffing the air. And while that's going on, I see the area in front of the tent starting to become illuminated with light. That's when I stood up and turned my head, and it was April. She was in a truck screaming at me, saying, "Get in, get in." Man, I'll tell you, I never ran that fast in my life. And in my mind, I just knew that thing was chasing me down. I hopped in the passenger seat of the truck, and then I got a glimpse as April was backing out of there. It had not moved at all. It was just standing there, looking at us. That night, we lost about $350 worth of camping equipment. And when I asked April why she didn't tell me anything, she said she didn't have time to convince me that it was a monster. She already knew what it was when she heard it the night before. She went on to tell me back in Karen Crow, Louisiana, they called it the Rougarou. And instead of trying to spend time arguing and convincing me, she decided it was best to go get the truck. Truthfully, April couldn't have been gone no more than 3 to 5 minutes. But in my mind, it felt like 10. And if I'm being totally honest with you guys, I was a little pissed off that she left me. But when she came back for me, I realized that this woman
really, really loved me.
Remember, you can visit our guest at his website, imdarkwaters.com. You can also call him if you have your own stories to share, 504-603-1630. If you have answers and you're an insider, you know about some of these genetically altered beings, let him know. Give him a call. And pranksters, stay away. Don't waste any of our time with that. But we are interested in hearing some of the behind-the-scenes stories and some of the other aspects of this. So if you know something, feel free to pick up the phone and give Dark a call, 504-603-1630, and keep up with him at imdarkwaters.com. It's always great visiting with you, Dark. I appreciate it. I know our listeners love having you here. How about before we let you go, though, I know in your mind you've got a couple of killer stories that you weren't able to share in audio story form, but something maybe new or something weird that's popped up. What would you like to share with us on your way out tonight?
I think the weirdest one that I've had just recently came from a young lady who was telling me about a Bigfoot encounter that they had when they were kids in the cornfields around, around Halloween time. Them and their friends had a plan because all their family members would get together around Halloween and they would kind of hang out and have a little party. So they decided to go trick-or-treating, riding their bikes to the country town, and then it's three boys and three girls. They decide they're going to kind of go out in the cornfields and make out. You know, we're talking about 14-year-old kids. So they're going to go in the cornfields and make out. And they're out there, you know, doing what kids do, experimenting, playing around. And one particular couple, which was the oldest, they literally hear what they said sounded like a giant's footsteps walking through the cornfield. And they're laying on the ground, and they feel the ground shaking. They stand up, look around, they hear the corn moving, and they're like, man, what is that? What's going on? Then about 15 to 30 seconds later, they hear their friends screaming in the cornfields. I mean, screaming at the top of their lungs, completely frightened. And they all come back to this little access road where, you know, you can kind of see going left and right. Well, they look and they see two of their friends full sprint down the road back to the house. I mean, full speed sprint. Now, it was six of them total, so they're thinking, well, where are the other two at? We're all friends. It screams. And I mean, literally, when he told me the story, he described the scream. He said, man, it sounded like someone took an air horn and put it in my ear and then just blew it. So him and his little girlfriend run off back to the house, and now they're freaking out because there's clearly some type of creature in this cornfield. But their other two friends aren't anywhere to be found. Like, and now they're freaking out. They haven't gone all the way in the house. They're back at the porch. Because now they got to go in the house and explain to their parents, well, look, there's something in the fields, and our friends are missing. They go into the back door of the house to go tell their parents. One of them sitting at the table eating fried chicken. The other one comes out of the front room with a glass of Kool-Aid, and just drinking the Kool-Aid. And they're like, oh, my God, you guys are here. They all go back outside, and they're like, look, you know, what was going on? What happened? That's when they finally see Bigfoot. And he said, this is his first time seeing Bigfoot. He said, man, the thing was so big. And just standing in the middle of the roadway between the cornfields, between the corn stalks where you could clearly see it. So, man, this thing was so big that its shoulders were above the corn stalks, which, you know, the average corn stalk is about 6 to 7 feet tall.
Wow.
He said, and the head was massive. He said, the shoulders looked to them. And you got to keep in mind that they were kids when they had this encounter. So perspective is off when you're younger as opposed to being an adult. He said, but the shoulders looked to me like they took up half of the little access road. They said, stood there and looked at him. And then it finally turned around and walked off. And I was like, whoa, whoa. So, when I first heard the story, I was like, yeah, you know, you're one person telling me. And I said, well, where are the rest of the people? He said, well, the young lady that was in the cornfields with me is my wife. You want to talk to her? And I'm like, you guys got married? He's like, yeah. So I talked to her, and she was like, yeah, that's exactly what happened. And I talked to three out of the six. And all three of them gave the same story and recounted the same encounter from their different perspectives. And I was like, man, that's freaky. That's freaky. Out there trying to play around, and Bigfoot rolls up on you. I wouldn't wish that upon anybody. You know, that would That would mess up my sex life forever.
Yeah, see, I always laugh at my buddies that are Bigfoot hunters, and they're trying to get me to go back out, and I've kind of got an interest, but I'm like, what happens if we run into them? Because you guys don't believe in killing them. So what are we going to do if we do round the corner and we come in to a very pissed off Bigfoot? Well, I think I figured it out now, Dark. They're just going to take me because they want the fat, slow guy with them so that they can trip me and take off, and they've left bait behind for Bigfoot to feast on. I just don't get it. Well, you go out there and look for this thing. I don't know what is the end game. You're going to whip out your phone and just start taking pictures? I've heard too many negative encounters with this creature to think, I just don't want to put myself in that position that what if I get one on a bad day?
You know, I listen to people all the time who say they research, they go out and see Bigfoot. You know, to me, it makes no logical sense. I'm not calling them crazy, but maybe they're slightly crazy because think about it. This entity has been around for hundreds of years surviving in the woods. You know, we are so domesticated nowadays that the average human being has trouble walking through the woods.
Right.
Now, you're a Bigfoot hunter and you pretty much experience in the woods, but this thing has the complete and total advantage on you. You know, that's like, you know, that's like somebody from Nebraska coming to New Orleans and going into the projects and saying, yeah, I'm just going to go hang out in the projects of New Orleans. No, you just shouldn't do it. You know what I'm saying? It's just not something you should do. It makes no sense. You know, you have no advantage of being there whatsoever. And all in the case of you want to find evidence of a creature, where there's, I think there's sufficient evidence that the creature exists at this point in time. You don't have to me. You don't have to have a clear photo or a video of it to believe in it. You know that people have encountered it. And if you're researching, you talk to people who encountered it, you know that after a certain point in time, all these stories start to correlate and they become these similarities are there. And now you understand it's like putting the pieces of a puzzle together instead of putting it together face up on a table, you face the puzzle upside down on a table and you put together the pieces for the puzzle. Well, when you slide your head under the table and you look at it, you see the whole picture, right? And that's what it is, in my opinion, when it comes to doing this research. You don't have to run out and run through the woods to, you know, get stabbed in the butt by briars and risk being bitten by snakes in order to get to the truth. Now, if you want to be popular and make $1 million and show evidence, then maybe that's what you do. But you know the truth is already there based on the people that you talk to.
Agreed. Dark, it's always a pleasure talking to you. How about this? How about we kick off the new year right this year? We'll bring you back in sometime in January. So start culling through your massive assortment of stories, and maybe some of our listeners will contact you with some new ones. And we'll touch base in January, have you back on, and have you share some of the newest batch of creepy tales. Sound like a good idea?
Sound like a good idea. We're going to some demonic stuff January. Then. Let's go. We'll just go off the cliff. As long as you're going to go off the cliff with me, Dave, I'm safe. I'm not going off that cliff by myself.
I will Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid with you. We'll take that dive together. I am darkwaters.com. Give him a call, 504-603-1630. Talk to the man himself and share your stories. And make sure you check out one of the best shows out there. IamDarkWaters.com has got all the information there. It's always a pleasure talking to you, Dark, and it's always a pleasure talking to you, our lovely audience. We'll be back tomorrow with a brand new episode of the Best in Paranormal Talk Radio and a brand new Theater of the Mind right here on Beyond the Darkness.